Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. This is episode 108. My God, you guys, you believe we've done 108 of these things? My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And Chris Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody?
Doing all right.
Splendiferous.
Yay. I did actually, Facebook Memories just pinged me and said that... Two weeks ago, or the 15th of this, it was the first time I posted a link to our podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. February 15th of 2015.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, as we record this, it is February 15th, but as you're listening to it, you are listening to it on March 6th.
The future.
2017. And so,
Comic-Con
by the time...
Comic-Con was amazing!
Yeah, how was it?
We made so much money.
Oh, good.
So much money.
Glad to hear it. All right, and you're still trying to put the store back together.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
From both the con and Cole Hornaday, and I just finished a couple weeks of filming here.
Right, in a couple weeks from now, you're going to need to be showing up at West of Lennon on April 14th at 8 p.m. for not Chapter 1, not Chapter 2, not Chapter 3, but Chapter 4 of the Panel Jumper Live.
Yeah.
And see all four of us lovely people there among... a lot of other very, very
handful
talented
of others,
but not as lovely. But
yes, yeah. Panel Jumper Live, April 14th. Mark your calendars, please.
Oh, you will believe we'll be pushing that hard in the coming weeks.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Because I'm still in our video making mode.
Yeah,
right now,
I know. So. As am I. Yeah. Okay, so as you're listening to this, Marvel just had an event called Monsters Unleashed, which will ultimately launch a regular series starring monsters. Let's talk more about Marvel's classic monsters. Let's do it, friends. What are some of them?
Yeah. So I was focusing on the big guys, not like their Draculas and their Ghost Riders and
that. Are these like the Kirby?
Yep.
Yeah, these are the Silver Age
Kirby monsters when post-code era when we couldn't have zombies and vampires and werewolves anymore.
In Cold War, mutants were popular in movies and all that.
Giant radioactive critters, but no zombies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they used to occupy all the...
monsters.
Yeah. All the anthology titles, like Strange Tales and Journey into Mystery and Tales of Suspense and Where Monsters Dwell and Where Creatures Suspensefully Dwell. And their tales of strange.
So, Jack Kirby drew every darn one of them.
I always thought the formula was just... I always thought when I was younger, the formula was just that Stan Lee would sneeze and that would be the name of the monster.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out that was actually mostly true.
Yep.
Because the way they did it was he would just kind of like, here's a name, design it, do whatever, I don't know. And that's Glor- how you Glor- get...
Breek, Blonk.
Well, you get such great names like Groot.
Groot.
Sprag. Goom and Googam, son of Goom, Gorgilla, Craw the Unhuman, Orgo, Pildor, Spore, Zemnu the Titan, who's great. He's kind of a big fuzzy guy with a metal head. And Zutak, who was inked by Steve Ditko. And we got Groot out of all that. And one of the best names ever, Fin Fang Foom.
Fin Fang Foom. And some of these monsters just fell into obscurity, but others would showed up throughout the history of Marvel with Fing Fang Foom became, you know, part of
an actual
threat to the superheroes.
Yeah.
And Zemu did too in Defenders, right?
Yeah. And Zemu did like Defenders, and I thought he would pop up like a whole lot. He popped up in like She-Hulk and other stuff too, oddly enough. But
because he is silly, and there was that silly era of She-Hulk. So
the thing is Kirby was still in full Kirby mode and even started making monsters for the superheroes. So he created one of my favorites, Mangog, who had the power and hatred of a billion beings. And that's my jam right there. That's my guy.
Oh, yeah, that's completely
He's just
your
a
jam.
Very angry guy. So Marvel's bringing him back, and there's this kid who has the power to draw them into existence.
So is that the premise? Does he literally draw the critters?
Yeah,
and they,
there's a whole bunch of new critters who are kind of generic kaiju. Mm-hmm. And then he draws up the old critters, and they're been summoned by him, and so you have a big old monster brawl. Mm-hmm.
So are they? So there's monsters across the board in all the titles, and I saw some really awesome art Adams covers. Mm-hmm. Are they all Art Adams covers?
No, that's like one of the variant covers. No. But there are some really cool Francisco Francavilla covers.
Yes, Francavilla covers have been really cool.
We like him.
And they're done kind of like 50s movie poster kind of style.
Yeah, they're really cool.
Is that the tone? What is the tone? Do you know the tone?
Tone's kind of all over the place because there's different artists for every issue.
Yeah.
Because you have like Lionel Francis Yu on one, I think. You had Steve McNiven on one. Greg Land
was on another one. Yeah.
But are the storylines of all the Marvel titles sort of like stopping while we have a one-shot battle?
No, there's like a point MU for some of the titles, and it's just like things are happening. By the way, Monster showed up.
Right.
Yeah, it's like a lot of things.
Because
like
they're too busy with their other crossover, Inhumans versus X-Men, that they can't stop it twice. So they just made an extra one-shot for each issue.
So there's one where like the storyline is like mobsters show up. So it's like Mobsters Unleashed, and then halfway through the issue, it's Monsters Unleashed because then the monsters show up.
Okay.
And then there's another one where there's like schoolgirls who are trying to summon like Deadpool's heartmate, and they think they're getting his wife, but they really just get Spider-Man to show up because that's his true heartmate. And then monsters show up.
Mm-hmm. You know, schoolgirls unleashed.
Yeah. Schoolgirls unleashed. Yeah, everyone's unleashed, and then monsters are unleashed. And
kittens in a classroom.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah.
But you get some really cool covers. Like I think the one that we did get by Arthur Adams is of Googam or Goom. I can't remember.
It's Goom.
It's Goom. Son of Googam, or is it the other way around?
I think.
But yeah.
Yeah. Goom is his dad.
Those guys.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, it's nice that they are bringing him back, and I hope we get more toys from them.
So has the regular series started already?
It's a mini series, and then there's going to be an ongoing series. Okay. So
and that will be in a month from this broadcast.
Yes.
Yes.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Who's your favorite monster?
Oh, man.
Probably Fin Fang Foom.
Yeah.
Do you have one, Nicole?
I mean, Foom is a pretty good choice.
I mean, it's a big green dragon with purple pants with an awesome name.
Isn't there, who is the whale guy who showed up in Squirrel Girl on the like card? He's got like muscle arms and he just lives in the deep.
The one that like Namor Maelstrom always summons. Something. I forget his name.
I want to say it's like
Monstro?
Yeah, I want
that
Monstro
sounds right,
from Pinocchio. But yes, I think you're right.
Okay. But I still think it's
something
right.
Like that.
It's something
like anyway,
that,
so there's all kinds of guys. I mean, there's even monsters who turned into a monster and then ran amok in the city and then came back to their little laboratory, which of course where all things happen, and then was like unmonstrified, and then he just moves on with his life. So you know, there's like some real flash in the pan monsters. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
All right. Yeah. Cole, do you have a favorite monster?
I love Fin Fang Foom because I have the action figure.
All right. Remember, Fin Fang Foom wins favorite monster.
Do we all have a Fin Fang Foom figure at home except for Ben Lawrence?
I don't think I have a Fin Fang Foom figure.
Mine was the Build-A-Figure.
Yep.
I don't think I have that one.
Well, and that was fart hot. Hard fought in one. I am tired. Fought in one because those BAF figures, man, you know this.
There are
parts that are
there.
You got to go to Timbuktu to find like.
There are some amazing bootlegs on the eBays. Just FYI,
we don't bootleg.
Pro tip: No. When it comes to Fin Fang Foom, and it's been a very long time.
Yeah,
you might want to bootleg.
I completed mine.
It's worth noting there was.
I probably spent like $300 putting them together, but I got them.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good Fin Fang Foom there. It's worth noting there was a really great story of Fin Fang Foom where Reed Richards had a shrink ray, and he shot different monsters and put them to work at the Baxter Building as like a public service. Mm-hmm. And so Fin Fang Foom was the in-house chef for a while, and he was just grumpy the entire time, and he hated humans, but he had to do this job as a public service. It was really great.
Yeah.
But what about the next wave story where he swallows
Machine Man
and poops him out?
No, he got his heart ripped out.
Does he? Oh, I thought he got pooped out.
No, he got his heart ripped off, and then he cried because his heart was broken.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. It seems to me that we should have in a segment dedicated entirely to Fin Fang Foom.
We should.
Which we might.
He's touched all of our lives.
We might do that later, but we got to move on, and let's talk about one of my favorite monsters, the Xenomorph in the Alien franchise.
Wow, well, where did this come from? Why were you so inspired to discuss or devote an entire episode to the Zoom.
It was it was actually mentioned during a previous episode where we could spend an entire segment on talking about aliens. And I actually I recently went back and watched the first two Alien movies.
Mm-hmm. So did
and I realized that I hadn't seen either one of them in a long time.
Yeah,
and
same.
Watching them was like watching them for the first time. It was awesome because like little bits would spark memory, but I had totally forgotten large chunks of story.
Yeah,
and it was really great. And I had a lot of fun, and I did not watch anymore. I stopped at the first two. I'm like, I'm done. I got a good alien taste in my mouth. I don't want to soil it.
So did you watch director's cuts of either one or just
no, just whatever was available on iTunes?
Because the director's cuts of both of those first two movies are fascinating to me.
That is what was available on iTunes, because the director's cut of the first one did have an extended sequence like at the dinner table or something.
Well, there's actually the scene that was cut is when Ripley's trying to get it, because you never find out what happens to Brett and Captain Dallas. And she's trying to escape the ship, and she finds them cocooned. Mm-hmm. I think Brett is comatose, and Dallas pleads for her to kill him because, you know, and we see that sequence in Aliens with when they come across the colonist who's been infected or infested or however. Yeah, I've never seen that scene in context of the film. I've seen it, in extras.
Yeah.
But in Aliens, there was actually all the stuff they cut out of Aliens, I think, is useless. It's just the extra Gatling gun sequences and things like that you just don't need. They set up robot guns to catch the aliens, and it's long and gratuitous, and it doesn't help the story.
It is super long, but it's also they're building up a bit of suspense, because you know that the Gatling guns have a limited amount of ammunition, and so it's that countdown of like, we're able to fend them off right now.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But once the Gatling guns go quiet,
all right. I thought they were useless, because I loved that they go in. So they go into the colony, they go into the interior of the colony, and they are so full of so much bravado and hubris, and they just immediately are assaulted and demolished by these monsters because they don't know what to expect. And that scared the crap out of me. I thought that was great.
Game over, man.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been. Yeah.
Side note, he's the first person to ever be killed by an alien, a predator, and a Terminator.
Bill Paxton?
Yep. Second person is Lance Henriksen. So, yeah.
And a Terminator?
Yep. For Bill, he was in. I know he was killed by a Terminator. I thought he was in the police office. I know Lance Henriksen was.
Lance Henriksen was, yeah. Okay.
It's possible.
I remember him bragging about it quite a bit, and then I did catch him somewhere in one of those. So yeah.
Well, if he said it, then it must be true.
he dies too soon in Predator 2. It's just like I was like, oh, what do you mean? He was gonna save this movie.
No.
So what about Alien and Aliens are considered great movies, at least by me.
Yeah,
probably by my friends here. Alien 3, that's the one on the penal colony planet. It does. I will give it this. It does have Brad Dourif in it. Brad Dourif is one of my favorite actors.
And it also has Peter Dinklage in Game of Thrones plays. Tywin Lannister.
Charles Dance.
He is in
terrific.
And he's in Aliens.
The thing is, we were all so devastated by what we got with Alien 3 that we vilified it. But when Alien Resurrection came out, I went back and watched Alien 3 and went, you know, this is actually a very well-crafted movie. It's not Aliens. It's not Alien. It doesn't fit, but you know, it's not a bad movie. Compared to Alien Resurrection.
And I actually like Resurrection.
Oh, dear.
Now, I don't even think I've seen that one. Briefly describe the plot to me, please.
We go far, far, far into the future. It's directed by Genet.
Jean Genet. Script is by Joss Whedon.
In part. Yeah, in I think part, he doctored it. Hmm. You're right. But I think he's one of, like, several script writers on it. But, you know... Jean Genet gave us like marvelous films like Delicatessen,
City of Lost Children,
you know, and Amelie. And why they thought it was a good idea to hand the Alien franchise to this person, because he uses all of his stock is stock French actors, including Ron Perlman, who I guess speaks French because he does in City of Lost Children.
He actually read the scripts not knowing what any of the words were in City of Lost Children.
I heard that.
Oh, Perlman did.
Yeah, Perlman.
Because I don't think, because I think Genet had to have a translator on the set, because I remember watching clips from it, and there's a, and Sigourney Weaver is asking him questions, and they're going through the translator. I'm like, God, that's just got to be a nightmare of filmmaking.
Well,
but it's just a mess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually stand corrected. I confused the last two Alien movies, because I actually have seen Resurrection, because that's the one Brad Dourif is in.
Yeah.
And I just remember the scene with him.
Yep.
And Ron Perlman. So I thought that was the Penal Colony one. Oh, but I was wrong.
Three is the dog. Three is the dog alien in the Penal Colony.
Mm-hmm. The dog alien.
And the,
All right.
And her taking the...
All right, then.
All righty. Now I gotta watch
and
it.
And her taking the swan dive into the smelter.
Yeah.
So.
Aww.
And then her hand rises up. Oh, wait, no, never mind.
Big thumbs up.
Big thumbs up. And then it gives him the bird. Alien versus Predator. I actually have a really soft spot in my heart for the very first one.
First one's better. First one's better. Second one is atrocious.
The second one is just grotesque. I remember I went and saw the second one. I was the only person in the theater.
Yeah.
love I it when think, that happens. I think it was the second weekend. I was the only person in the theater.
If I'm remembering this correctly, Aliens versus Predator, like every time the Predators would show up, I immediately saw a guy in a costume. Like the other Predator movies, it was like, oh, that's the Predator. That's scary. But like, it just, I was looking for a zipper. And I think I might have even seen one at some point. I don't know. And it was just kind of difficult to, like, why would they be, who cares? Why are they fighting? You know?
Spent all the money in the aliens.
The first one at least was gratifying because we'd been doing this in the comics for a while.
Right.
And it was cool to see all the monsters come together. But the second one, just not only was it more of the same, but it broke all the rules.
Broke the rules. It had just bad storytelling.
Yeah.
And grotesque is the right word because it did two or three things that I thought were actually...
like distasteful.
Distasteful and pardonable. Because at first they showed them like a kid pretty much dying right off the bat. And I'm like, really? I don't need that right now. But then they did the whole thing with like the pregnancy ward. And it's just like, you know what? Screw you, movie. Screw you, movie.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Dark Horse Comics was telling some really cool alien stories. And in the 80s, between 2 and 3, Mark Verheiden was, and Mark A. Nelson did a story about what happened to Newt and Hicks after they get back to, and Ripley's not in it because they didn't have the rights to use Sigourney Weaver's image.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this wonderful story, and it came back into print recently.
Yep, the anniversary editions, really nice hardcovers, really, really well put
together.
Mark
Nelson was one of my, he's one of those artists I just adore, and you just simply did not see his work much at all. But it's this, you know, what if kind of story, and Newt is a grown woman and in a psych ward, and Hicks is a pariah because no one will believe his story, and they've just barely mentioned Ripley, and the aliens are coming to Earth, but they are there is a religious order that is establishing a foundation that are worshiping them. So this is how the aliens are going to destroy us, not by eating us, but destroying our culture and then eating us.
Right.
It was really, but there were a series of miniseries that were taken on by different creators, creative teams, and really were challenging what was set up in the movies.
And some were better than others.
Yeah,
some were.
The Colonial Marines series was like a year-long 12 issue. I gave up after like the fourth issue.
And I hate the Chris Claremont one because he did like a 12 issue one that was Alien versus Predator, Deadliest of the Species.
Miserable. I read it more than once trying to figure out what the heck was going on.
The two that I will say are my favorites, John Arcudi has done a bunch of them. And Arcudi created The Mask, which the original comic is much more violent and interesting than the TV, than the Jim Carrey one. He also has done a ton of BPRD and Hellboy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he did one called Stronghold, which featured this married couple shipping things to like a science space station where there's one human, a bunch of synths, and then a hive of aliens that they're experimenting on. Mm-hmm. And the married couple are sent there to investigate to see if he's messing stuff up with the company. And he's gone space crazy. And he has a synth that's shaped like an alien named like Andy, I think.
Right, it talks
and,
to him.
Yeah,
right?
And Andy's yeah. really nice.
Yeah.
There's a big one. I can't remember the big... There's like one that's like a giant mecha suit of death. Uh-huh. And his name's like Frank or Tom or something like that.
Oh, but, Frank.
Yeah, but it's a really good just space crazy psycho story with a talking alien that smokes cigars.
Right.
And sounds kind of great.
Yeah.
Did Sam Keith draw that one?
No, that was by Doug Ooh. Monkey.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Doug Monkey, who did The Mask and right. yeah, him and like Arcudi are
so
bros
point
for
of connection
life.
And dating is that Mark Verheiden wrote several of those stories. Verheiden went on to write the screenplay for The Mask.
Ah, interesting.
So,
yeah. yeah.
And now he, what is he doing now? Oh, he wrote. Ash versus Evil Dead.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice.
Love that.
The nice. TV series.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
I've seen the first season. It's great.
Cool.
I'm so glad. I didn't realize you watched that. I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah. Keep going, Chris. I'm sorry.
The other one I was going to recommend was by Mark Schultz and drawn by Doug Wheatley. And that one was called Apocalypse Avenging Angels. And the specifics of the plot escape me, but this was actually the first, second time they returned to the space jockeys. Uh-huh.
You mean the engineers?
The engineers, yeah. And the cool thing that came out of it was at that point in the time, Dark Horse gave the green light to be like, well, if you look at that ship, this jockey looked like it was part of the ship and it was huge. And so they actually had an alien come out of a space jockey, and it was a giant. And Doug Wheatley had beautifully, beautifully detailed art. If you've ever seen Mark Schultz artwork, it almost puts that to shame. Almost, not quite. And so you got the benefit of like giant monster alien, really cool artwork. There was an owl helping the humans out for whatever reason. But it was a fun story because Mark Schultz.
I don't remember that one. I was given up on him by about that.
Yeah,
point.
It snuck under the radar. It's like late 90s, early 2000s. So yeah, and there's still a bunch of them going now, but they're merging it with the Prometheus stuff.
Right. But of all the licenses that Dark Horse lost from Star Wars on, they still have Alien.
They still do.
Yeah, and they still have Predator. Yeah, and then we get to Prometheus. Yeah. And Prometheus just... as a film, as a concept, did you guys read the article?
I did.
Okay.
There's separation of church and state. I want a separation of church and xenomorph.
Well,
there's too much Jesus happening there.
Just to clarify that the film Prometheus that we got was nothing. Bore very little likeness to the story that Ridley Scott wanted to tell. In fact, there was really no point in calling that film Prometheus because it was not about gods and man, which was his original story. It's not even there. And what boggles my brain is that we're going forward. We've got Alien Covenant coming. When is that? Is that next summer?
I think so.
The trailers are out now.
2018.
That sounds more religious.
Look for it.
So I think all of the religious themes that were dropped from Prometheus are going to be incorporated into Alien Covenant.
Right.
Yeah.
Covenant, whatever gives you the idea there'd be a religious tone.
Indiana Jones is going to find the Alien Covenant in a big warehouse somewhere.
Could only help the story.
He opens the Ark and a bunch of acid hits him in the face.
Face
hugger.
Why do you think that guy melted?
It is intriguing to look at where the franchise has gone, because when you look at Alien, there was a discussion that I read or saw or whatever, but Alien itself is a haunted house story. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trapped in a haunted house. It just happens to be in outer space.
Yeah.
And then Aliens is a combat metaphor. I remember some people, when it first came out, people saying that it's a metaphor for Vietnam because these soldiers are thrust into this unwinnable situation. And then when Alien 3 came out, we all stopped and asked, well, what's this about? And actually, there was one discussion that it was a metaphor for AIDS. Contained culture, contained society, and they're slowly being killed off from within. I didn't buy that one, but also, I do. If you ever have opportunity, the patience to take a look at the permutations of the Alien 3 script, that was, you want to talk about a mess. There were dozens of writers, including William Gibson, who had a scenario that had something to do with a wooden space station.
I'm not kidding around.
Oh, it's like a submarine with doors.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Were you looking up something, Nicole?
Oh, yeah. It looks like Covenant's actually due out May 19th of this year.
Ooh. Okay.
So right after you go see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
There you go.
It's probably already been edited as they're shopping around to test audiences and they'll change it.
And all the test audiences are going, what? What is this?
I read that when Alien was first being shopped and the screenplay was first being shopped, it was pitched as Jaws in Space.
Mm-hmm. It was called Gremlins. It was going to be called Gremlins. And the original story was actually set on a World War II bomber. And it was about they're trapped in the plane with these critters that are slowly killing off the crew, and then it evolved. Dan O'Bannon evolved it into, this haunted house in space.
Dan O'Bannon sounds like an expletive. Dan O'Bannon.
Dan O'Bannon. Yeah.
All right. So, do we have anything else we want to say about Alien before we move along?
Tons
to Booker
of stuff
Park?
To say about aliens.
We could do a whole.
All right, well, let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And this week, let's start with you, Mr. Cole Hornaday. Okay. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I read a book that I was shocked and amazed about how much I enjoyed, and I mean that sincerely. I read Superman American Alien by Max Landis, and Landis was actually the screenwriter of the film Chronicle, which was the found footage superhero film directed by the fellow who directed that ill-begotten Fantastic Four movie. And Chronicle is worth
which
watch,
one are you talking
the
about?
Most recent okay. one that you and I suffered through the most to stop on a sidebar. Chronicle's worth watching if you are not totally done with the found footage thing. It's about a group of teenage superheroes, and it's set in Seattle, a Seattle that doesn't exist anywhere in the world.
Is it a Seattle that exists in Vancouver, BC?
No, I mean, there are landmarks in this movie in Seattle but there is kind of this cool fight sequence in the fog, in the air around a very foggy Space Needle.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so. But anyway, Superman, American Alien, this is, Landis was kind of given free rein to sort of retell the Superman story, the origin of Clark Kent, and discovering his superpowers and coming to Metropolis and becoming the savior of the world. It is lovely. It's done in short arcs with different artists, all of them folks that you are probably familiar with. Let's see if I can look them up. Let's see. There's Nick Dragata, Tommy Lee Edwards, Joelle Jones, Jay Lee, Francis Manipal, Jonathan Case, Jock, and they all are different crucial moments in this non-continuity story of Clark Kent becoming Superman. I am totally confused where we are at in Superman storytelling and continuity at DC because I just don't read any DC books.
So anymore. Superman, so you're okay.
I don't read. I got so fed up with all of it that I think I only read Hellblazer. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only DC book I read. But in reading this, I was like, this is a beautiful Bible for this character in a modern context. He's genuine, he's sincere, he's vulnerable, but he's not a moron. The only thing that I thought was really intriguing was that in this story, in the American Alien, the people of Smallville know what Clark is capable of. They openly talk about his abilities and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. But beyond that, we still have the same tried and true Superman stories that we're familiar with. They just come at it from a different angle. I loved it. I wish they would do this kind of thing when they do a reboot. It's just let's have somebody write a Bible for that series is going to follow and go from there, because frankly, this is a Bible I would trust. Anyway, thoroughly enjoyed it. Superman, American Alien.
Awesome.
I recommend.
Thank you, Cole. Nicole, what do you want to tell us about?
I read Empowered and The Soldier of Love. It's a mini series, one of three, written by Adam Warren and art by Carla Diaz. And so just before I even get into what it is, I thought it was really, really cute in the back of the thing where he talks about how this was a story that he wanted to tell for a long time. And he found that it was supposed to be a project all its own, not connected to Empowered. But Empowered has a whole bunch of superheroes, a large array of superhero type people. And so he found that the story would fit in really well, but he also hates, he's strongly adverse to drawing fanciful pleats, ruffles, flounces, and pimples. Yeah.
So
the Soldier of Love, she's got the super ruffly, like, Harajuku girl kind of Lolita look. And he was like, so I had to wait for like a very special artist to draw this. Hence, Carla Diaz, and her art is fantastic. So the premise of the story is this mysterious Cupid-type character shows up in the Empowered world, where Empowered is the main protagonist. She's this low self-esteem, not very great superhero with a super suit that fails all the time. And so it's like constantly getting ripped up and stuff like that. And her friend, who is Ninjette, is a tomboy and isn't associated with the superheroes, I don't think.
Nope.
Yeah, she's kind of does her own thing.
She's a ninja from New Jersey.
Yeah.
An alcoholic ninja from New Jersey.
It sounds like a song.
Yeah.
From New Jersey.
So as they're like just kind of going about their normal superheroing thing, they're noticing these superheroes having these strange like love triangles and threesomes and weird hookups like all around them. And Empowered realizes like, well, this actually seems kind of strange, so we should try to figure out what's going on. And this Cupid woman is going around doing all of this, and she's hired by somebody, we don't know who it is yet, who's trying to muck up all the superheroes by getting into all of this romantic drama, because Empowered goes back to her like HQ with all the rest of her super homies, is what they're called.
Mm-hmm.
And they, by the way, they give you a very quick synopsis in the very beginning of it. So if you've never read an Empowered comic, you can get the general gist of who's the characters. But she goes back to the HQ and they're all like texting each other, being like, hey, daddy, what you doing later? And now I'm thinking about you. Wink, 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 wink. Kissy face, kissy face. And then there's even this great moment between these two characters where they, Ninjette and Empowered, think they're going to fight. And really, it's these two guys being like, come at me, bro. Yeah, this is a long time coming, bro. Yeah, bro. We're going to totally go for this, bro. And then all of a sudden they start making out. You know, just so it's really gay as well. And so we still don't. Also, the Cupid lady has some Spanish-speaking aardvark guy who also seems to have powers of magical ability. So every time that she shows up, there's like background music, like the Love's theme, Love Unlimited Orchestra. There's like a Color Me Bad song that they say. And so if you're looking for some Spanish in your comic, this would be one of that, because aardvark's pretty cute. So all in all, it's super, super fun. It really plays around with the superhero archetypes, and it's just a highly enjoyable thing. It's only a 3-issue series. I don't know how they'll collect these things exactly. I didn't do my research on how they have been collecting their miniseries or one-shots. But
quite some time, right?
Yeah, it's been around for quite a long time. There's like 10 volumes out right now.
Yeah. So this will be like volume 11 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Something like that. Yeah. But, you know, even if you haven't tried an Empowered comic, I would recommend picking this up just because it was really fun. It's a $4 comic and really colorful. It's great.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Wow, Color Me Bad. There's a band I haven't thought of.
Yeah,
ever.
Seriously, right?
All right. Chris Casso. What about you, sir?
I read the first issue of the new Star-Lord relaunch, because everything's getting relaunched again. And this one's
grounded, though.
This one's because due to the Civil War, the Guardian's ship was blown up, and apparently you can't find spaceships on Earth, even though, whatever. But so this is by Chip Zdarsky and Chris Anka, and I actually did really like the first issue because Star-Lord's basically just bumming on Earth, living off of S.H.I.E.L.D. or S.W.O.R.D., which is part of S.H.I.E.L.D., and there's a great moment where the director of S.W.O.R.D. gives him a cell phone, and she's like, stop pitying yourself. This phone has all the phone numbers of all your friends on Earth. Go hang out with somebody. There's only two phone numbers on the phone, and one of them is Kitty Pryde, his ex-fiance, so he doesn't want to do that, and then the other one is Howard the Duck, and he calls Howard, and Howard's like, oh, Oh, are you feeling lonely in a world that you never made? Oh, suck it up. And it just hangs up on him.
Nice.
So he goes and he goes to the art museum and he's like, oh, this is nice. And then he happens across Kitty Pryde and Old Man Logan. And it's basically he's just lonely and kind of is sad. And it's a lot of fun. It's more of a character piece than anything.
I like lonely and sad. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, and then he hangs out with Old Man Logan. He's like, oh, I forget. You're from the alternate future where everything sucks and you're lonely as well. And they're like, yeah, we're all lonely. Let's have some drinks. And that's kind of it. And then stuff happens. It's very low key. Like, I don't really care about the threats. There's not even any real threats. And it has a nice little subtle sense of humor because his shirt keeps getting ripped off. And I feel that both the creators were like, what do we take the most out of the movie? Chris Pratt looks great without a shirt. Okay, fit that in. Or the other story is maybe there's a Disney executive hovering over their shoulder being like, more pecs. So it's fun. I'm not going to say it's great. It's obviously only going to last for like 6 issues or whatever before they relaunch again when the movie comes out and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
No, it was a great ending. The end, blah, blah, blah.
It's fun. I like Chip Zdarsky, so yeah.
All right, cool. Thanks, Chris. Star-Lord, number one. And that is Book Report, and that is our show. And coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. And Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Find us at perfectboundpodcast.com, where you can subscribe to us via iTunes or any way you get your podcast. Send us an email at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now get your quiz hats on, everybody. It's quiz time. And Cole, keep your hands to yourself and lay it on us.
It sounds bad.
I'm not touching you.
I'm not touching you.
I didn't even come close to touching you. I don't know why you're being so twitchy.
Don't make me turn this comic store around.
Okay, well, we're going to go back to the thematic discussion from the early part of the show, and welcome to Alien Quiz Time, or in space, no one can hear the clue phone ring. Okay, that was funnier on paper.
I love how your quizzes always have 2 titles.
Yeah, because comedy?
In space, no one can hear you quiz.
We'll keep working on this. Let's draft some more. Okay, all right. First up, he's the only crew member of the mining freighter Nostromo to survive the predation of her crew alongside Lieutenant First Class Ellen Ripley.
Kitty Cat.
Who is he?
Jonesy.
Jonesy the cat, that's right. In the final act of Alien, Ripley believes herself safe from the Xenomorph when she escapes into this shuttlecraft. What is the name of the shuttlecraft?
Durr.
Gosh, I feel bad because I just watched these.
Yeah, you should be fresh on
this, I know, man. I don't know what the name of the Excalibur.
The Narcissus.
Dang.
All right. In Aliens, Corporal Hicks entreats synthetic science officer Lance Bishop to do that thing with the knife. What is the name of the knife game?
Knife game?
Right? Yes, yes, the thing with the knife.
I don't know the name.
It's called the five-finger filet.
Mm.
And I always thought it was mumbly peg. But mumbly peg is actually when you throw the knife into the dirt from different angles and make it stick. Yeah, it's five-finger filet.
He's doing it really well right now.
And with a sharp pencil, yeah. I might have.
Yes, very sharp.
The object of mumbly peg was actually to cause the blade to stick in the ground or wooden surface by flipping the knife any number of different prescribed ways or from a number of different positions. And if it doesn't stick, you lose. So I was way wrong.
But that was not the game.
That was not the game. It's five. So in case anybody
ever asked.
Five finger filet. Operation Aliens was a proposed animated series based on Aliens that was originally pitched by 20th Century Fox as a way to market Alien 3 as a Saturday morning cartoon show, but it never aired. I mean, can you imagine? However, 20th Century Fox had already planned the toy line and various paraphernalia for the show. Can you name 4 alien figures from the Kenner toy line? Hint, their names are derived from the life... No, you can't use the 3 on the shelf. That's we're going to... No, that's...
Okay,
no.
Okay.
Their names are derived from the life forms in which they larvae gestated, like the canine-styled xenomorph in Alien 3. So you can't use mantis, gorilla, or...
It's a queen, so it doesn't count anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Scorpion.
Good job.
Snake.
Mm-hmm.
Bull.
Mm-hmm.
Bat. There was one with the wings.
There was.
It was a queenie thing.
Yes, okay. It was a flying queen. Dude, there were so many. There was a one. I went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There were 11 different critters. And then there was also like the flying queen, the king alien, the facehugger, and the electric swarm. So and I had all of them.
For those of you paying attention, yeah. we actually started talking about these yeah. things a couple episodes ago. Right. And Cole shut us down because yeah, it was part of a quiz time.
But now Nika is doing these updated, more, I don't know, when you want to say, realistic version of the Kenner design.
Fancy.
Yes.
They are very fancy. Very, yeah. very well done.
These are like $25 figures, and I'm going to have to buy all of them.
Yeah, you are.
One more question. In Prometheus, director Ridley Scott's confusing and convoluted attempt to redefine or revamp or reboot the Alien franchise, we encounter a proto-alien bearing a strong likeness to the xenomorphs of the previous films. When it bursts from the body of one of the pasty-faced engineers, what was this creature called?
The Deacon.
Very good, the Deacon. All right, lightning round. Do we have a an off balance
da,
here?
Da,
yeah, okay,
da,
lightning
da,
round
da,
question. Da, this is probably going to be a gimme. In what film did audiences spy a trophy case featuring the skull of an alien warrior that sparked a rather profitable blending of the two franchises?
Would that be Predator 2?
That would be Predator 2 from 1990, yes.
Nice.
And that is quiz time.
All right. Well, thank you, Cole, and thank all of you for listening, and we will see you next week.